Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Glad to be with you this afternoon. Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show. We're most appreciative to have you along with us this afternoon. I see there's quite a few people online already. We promised to have a good show for you today. As promised, Robert Perry of Consortium News is going to be with us today. And he's going to talk about the Bush administration and their, well, their tactics now of starting to threaten anybody that says anything nasty about them. They can leak all they want to, but you better not say anything or they're going to get you. So, yeah, Robert's going to talk about that a little later. And a little later on in the program as well, we're going to have... Anna Cohen, and she's going to talk about these phony gas prices that we've got up here right now. Speaking of phony gas prices, before I go any further, let me give you the phone numbers, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you today. And don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking black box voting for all you people interested in that, black box voting tomorrow. I got an email just a while ago, as a matter, just maybe 15 minutes ago, and I thought you'd love to hear this. I've been talking about gas prices and everything lately, and I thought this was a very, very nice email from a gentleman who doesn't agree with what I said about the oil prices and the gas prices. He said, "Sir, you understand nothing about free enterprise. You are the typical effing... liberal, socialist, commie, SOB. This is America, and any man or woman or company is entitled to make every last dollar they can from anyone, any way they want to." Now, that's an interesting statement right there, any way they want to. I think there's a lot of women that have been picked up for prostitution would beg to differ with you on that, that the law sees it some other way. I think a lot of people that run little gambling casino that wasn't quite legal, they would beg to differ with you on that. There's a lot of ways you are not allowed to make money, but and you know, when it comes to it, comes right down to it, the oil companies, why they're just as much whores and as the people who've been arrested. Anyway, let me go on here. I get sidetracked so easily. Your God, Harry Truman, I guess he's heard me talk about Harry a time or two. Your God, Harry Truman, tried to interfere with the steel industry during the Korean War, and he was put in his place by the Supreme Courts. And if you and your kind try and interfere with the oil company profits this time, you will be dealt with in a far more severe manner, I assure you. Now, what does he mean by that? I don't know. Evidently, you are too stupid to realize who you're dealing with. Do you think for a moment they would allow you to mess with their business? You are an un-American blanker. That's the best way I can say that. And by the way, just because you are some unsuccessful lib who probably sits on his ass all day and gets a government handout paycheck, you are an effing parasite on society. Just so you know, I drive a Cadillac. He spelled Cadillac wrong. I drive a Cadillac Escalade, and my other vehicle is a Hummer. I buy gas for the both of them, and I don't whine about it like you useless libs do. You probably drive some puny little economy car, don't you, you fag? Gerald. Well, Gerald, thank you for that very kind letter, and thank you for putting an exclamation mark on what I think of most of you radical right wingers. I think you've just done them all proud. I really do. Drive a Cadillac Escalade. Nothing wrong with that. And my other vehicle is a Hummer. And I don't whine about the gas like you useless libs do. You fag. You. Okay. So I guess he's saying that only straight people drive Cadillac Escalades and Hummers. And I don't know what he means by that. But that was the best ad hominem attack letter that I've had for a while. And, you know, I didn't think it was too bad, really. I didn't think it was too bad at all. You know, I met a fellow in the grocery store this morning. Hope he's listening right now. Didn't get his name. But let him know where he could listen to the show this afternoon. Told him we were going to talk about gas prices for a little bit, and we will a little later on. But right around 4 o'clock, I think we're going to get seriously into that subject. The gas thing has got a lot of people upset. Finally, something has come along that's really upset people and hitting everybody in the billfold. Finally, something's happened in this administration, during this administration, that's upset everybody, and it's affecting everybody, and now people are upset. But I find it odd, and I find it a little bit sad. And don't get me wrong, I'm as upset with the gas prices as anyone could be. Man, I hate it when I fill up my car today and spent $49 and it wasn't even clear empty. Wow. Anyway, I find it odd that that is what's got everybody upset. Liberals and conservatives alike, libertarians, middle-of-the-road people, non-voters, that's got everybody upset far more than the 2,600, 2,700, however many it is, dead soldiers in Iraq. I find that our priorities are really screwed up. And don't get me wrong, it's fine that you'd be all concerned about the price of gasoline and the terrible ripoff that's taking place right now. That's just fine. I understand. We have every right to be upset about it because it's gouging plain and simple. And now Mr. Bush says he's going to launch an investigation. Where the hell was the investigation last winter when the senior citizens up in the Northeast and in the colder regions of the nation were paying sky-high fuel oil prices? Where was the investigation then? And where's this investigation going to lead? I think we all know where it will lead, especially since we know that the oil company executives helped write his energy plan. So we know about any so-called investigation. That's just a little bit of nose candy for his friends, that statement. Well, we're doing something about it, you know. We're launching an investigation. We're going to investigate the gas stations. Yeah, right. Like the gas stations are the ones making all the money. Sure. That's not to say some of them don't get their licks in when they can. Of course they do. But, come on. Going to launch an investigation. Just keep talking, Mr. President. Just keep talking. I urge you to go out morning, noon, and night and give all the speeches that you can give anytime, anywhere, because the more you open your yap, the lower your popularity goes. I think you've proven that by now, and I can't believe your handlers are still allowing you to go out and perform in public. Don't you know, even when he's out there introducing Tony Snow today, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, does the guy not look like a trained monkey? I'm serious. I mean that. I'm not saying that to be mean or anything else. I was at this little place one time over in North Carolina, my favorite name for a little town, Monkey Junction, North Carolina, and it was called that because there was a gas station on the corner over there, and a guy had this little monkey that would come out and perform, you know, you stop and bought gas, and he had this little monkey all dressed up, and that's exactly what Junior Bush reminds me of every time I see him. He needs that little collar around his neck with the chain on it. That's the only thing that's missing, maybe one of those little hats. Have you seen the picture on smirkingchimp.com? How it kind of morphs from his face to, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just putting it out there as the truth. That's what it looks like, and believe me, I'm not the one who came up with that. It was pointed out to me by other people. So, but I do, Mr. Letter Writer, I do understand the price of oil and why it is where it's at and all that. I do. You know, there are several matters that affect the price of oil. You got your price of, you know, of the gasoline. You got your crude oil price. You've got your refining. You've got your the marketing and distribution. Of course, you got taxes on it too. Had someone today trying to tell me, well, it's the taxes. Well, hell yes, taxes are a part of gasoline and have been, but they haven't gone up double in the last 2 years. Now, have they? No. As I told this gentleman, we can argue about the taxes on gasoline some other time. Right now, we're talking about the obscene profits made by the ExxonMobils of the world. It's, you know, the refining cost hasn't gone up that much. The marketing distribution cost hasn't gone up that much. The taxes haven't gone up that much. Crude has gone up. But you see, they own most of their crude. So the price of the crude is going up. It's going into their pockets. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the president of ExxonMobil, Shell, BP. Doesn't matter damn to me. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the president of the United States or king of the world. There is no way on God's earth that you can defend the price of gasoline right now. And I'm not sitting here saying that we couldn't do a lot better. You know, I was thinking last night. I was out on the road last evening, had to go do something for business, and I had to drive about, 13 miles away from my house and back again. I think about these things nowadays, just like you do. That's 26 miles. That's a little over a gallon of gas. You know, that's probably $4 right there for that little trip. But the highway here, US 41 and Interstate 75, just packed jam full of cars at the 6:30 in the evening, and I thought to myself, how many of these cars have to be on the road right now, including mine? How many of these cars absolutely have to be on the road right now? I would say three-quarters of them at least didn't have to be on the road at that time. They were going out to dinner. They were going to a movie. They were going to visit friends. They were out for a drive. They were doing this, doing that, going shopping, whatever. But it wasn't a necessity for all those cars to be on the road. Now, was it? I'll bet in this country, I'd like to know what the actual figures are. One of you get busy and figure this out for me. I'll bet half or two-thirds of the gasoline used in this country could be saved by conservation alone, by only taking necessary trips and really conserving. What do you think? Now, that's not going to solve the problem, because eventually we're going to run out of oil anyway someday. But this government is doing virtually nothing to encourage alternative fuels. The oil companies have put back very little in searches for alternative fuels. Everybody's just stuffing their pockets right now. It's the good old American way, just like that letter. Make as much as you can make from anybody you can make it from, any way, anyhow you can do it. That's what the letter said. I don't agree. And I'm glad that guy's not my neighbor. I really am. Every time I see one of those Hummers driving down the road, all shined up and clean, you know, the muddy ones, I don't mind. Now, that sounds strange, doesn't it? The nice muddy ones, you figure they've actually been off the road and might actually use that four-wheel drive, and they might need that rugged vehicle they got. But when you see them all shined up black with the chrome rims on and all that driving down the road, you think, what in the hell has somebody got a vehicle like that for? What do you need that vehicle for? I mean, it's your choice. It's your choice. But it just makes me wonder. I must be crazy. These are the things I wonder about. Anyway, the big news of the day, as you know, is Mr. Tony Snowjob, was made press secretary. And I want to take a moment and extend my congratulations to Rupert Murdoch today. He has done what no other man's been able to do, and that's to put his own personal propaganda machine in an office in the White House. And he's a foreigner to boot. It's a great accomplishment, and I salute you, Mr. Rupert Murdoch, for getting that done. Here's a guy who isn't even an American, and he's now in charge of the United States of America's Ministry of Propaganda. So now, Tony Snow has given up his show, and his appearances on Fox News to take this new Ministry of Republican Propaganda job. And we know he was making a handsome salary from his show and his Fox News duties. Got to be in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. Got to be in that neighborhood. So now, he'll be limited in his income. And I looked it up. Press secretary makes $157,000 a year. He goes from a couple of million bucks a year to a measly $157,000. All right. What's the catch? We know the Republicans were paying off a bunch of journalists. Is that what's going on here, too? Did the White House find a way to funnel him the difference between his healthy paycheck on the outside and his paltry $157,000 to be Junior Bush's new mouthpiece? He must have done something like that. Those pubbies don't give up money like that, now, do they? No. So there's something going on somewhere. As you can bet your bottom dollar, someone is making up the difference. And like I said, you remember, Snow is a Republican, and no Republican gives up the big paycheck for lesser money unless he knows there's some sort of a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. And furthermore, why would Snow all of a sudden jump from the safety of dry land onto the tilted deck of a sinking ship? Why would he do that? I thought he was a little smarter than that. Does he think we've all forgotten about the criticism that he's given Bush? Does he think we've forgotten about that? Does Bush even know about some of the things Tony Snow said about him in his administration? It's really hard to believe they'd bring someone on board who's ever uttered a word of criticism against Georgia Boy. Let me see if I got that here. I can play one of these for you. This is Tony Snow.
Racism isn't that big a deal anymore. No sensible person supports it. Nobody of importance preaches it. It's rapidly and thankfully becoming an ugly memory.
That's Tony Snow. Let's hear that again.
Here's the unmentionable secret. Racism isn't that big a deal anymore. No sensible person supports it. Nobody of importance preaches it. It's rapidly and thankfully becoming an ugly memory.
Thank you for that, Tony. Remember, the guy that said that is now the press secretary for the President of the United States. And might add a few other things. Here's a couple other things that Tony Snow has mentioned about this administration. On March 17th of 06, not too long ago, he said Bush has lost control of the federal budget and can't resist the temptation to stop raiding the public finances. March 17th, 06, George Bush and his colleagues have become not merely the custodians of the largest government in history of humankind, but also exponents of its vigorous expansion. Let's see what else we got here. On 11-11-05, Tony Snow said George Bush has become something of an embarrassment. 10-7-05, Bush has a habit of singing from the political correctness hymnal. And I like this one. September the 30th of 05, Tony Snow said, no president has looked this impotent this long when it comes to defending presidential powers and prerogatives. And what else we got here? 12-28-03, the president doesn't seem to give a rip about spending restraint. Well, it seems that Mr. Snow has been critical, as critical as anybody from Fox News is ever going to be. And now he's his mouthpiece. Wonder how many people turn that job down first. I wonder if Tony's his last choice. I have to wonder. And what else I have to wonder, if this is an example of how Josh Bolton's going to turn things around and instill the confidence of the public in Bush again, I think he's made a colossal mistake by putting Rupert Murdoch in charge of the press office at the White House. I think Americans are going to resent that. Rupert Murdoch, folks, don't think Tony Snow. Rupert Murdoch is in charge of the press office of the White House now. Rupert Murdoch. They can bandy the name of Tony Snow around all they want to. Rupert Murdoch is the master. Now, I'm sure that Tony Snowjob's appointment will be very, very popular with the cretins over at FreeRepublic.com. And by the way, as you know, the Freepers over there are dizzy with joy at the idea of having one of their heroes get that job. The puzzling thing is, though, for those of you that aren't familiar with this nasty website called FreeRepublic.com, we call them freepers. They're all half nuts. Tony Snow is a member over there, and Tony Snow posted over there. Well, all of a sudden, don't you know, all the posts of Tony Snow job and any mere mention of him suddenly got erased from the entire site. That's odd, don't you think? Doesn't this show that there's some obvious collusion between the Freepers and Fox and the White House? And tell me, I was thinking about this today. What are the good folks in the White House going to say when Helen Thomas asked Snowjob, Tony, what can you tell us about your statement of September 30th last year? No president has looked this impotent this long when it comes to defending presidential powers and prerogative. What's he going to say when Helen Thomas asks him a thing like that? And she will. God bless her, she will. And Tony, what about when you said Bush is given the impression he's more eager to please than to lead? Or how about when he said on the policy side, Bush has become a classical dime store Democrat? He'll gladly shovel money into programs that enjoy undeserved prestige, such as Head Start. He seems to consider it mean-spirited to shut down programs that rip off taxpayers and mislead supposed beneficiaries. Tony Snow said that about his new boss. You know, Tony, I think if the White House press corps had any cojones at all, they'd roast your ass until it was well done on the very first day. But then, as we all know, most of the White House press corps act like a bunch of neutered kitty cats. Except for Helen and a couple others. But really, all in all, you still have to give Rupert Murdoch, Tony Snowjob, and Fox lots of credit. You really do. You remember when Junior Bush was running for office and the president of the NRA said if Bush wins, we'll have an office in the White House? Well, I don't think that ever came true. But most definitely, Fox News now has an office there, and they're going to do a great job as the new Ministry of United States of America propaganda. This is but one more example of the in-your-face arrogance of the Bush administration. Even knowing that the American public will see this appointment for what it is, they did it anyway. Screw you, America. We don't give a damn what you think. We're the deciders. We will do what we want regardless of what you think about it. But seriously, it's going to be great. I'm going to enjoy it immensely. Tony Snowjob is the perfect guy for the job, and I, for one, applaud the White House for this appointment. I do, and I thank them from the bottom of my heart. If this doesn't put the old exclamation point on what we've said about these bums in the White House all along, I don't know what would. Go out and pick one of the worst kinds of partisan hacks they can find anywhere and make him the press secretary. A guy who's been a slave to Rupert Murdoch. My, oh my, oh my. Interesting. And did you see on the news today that evidently Mr. Karl Rove is back in front of the grand jury today? That's what I hear. I haven't had it confirmed yet, but I hear he's back in front of the grand jury today. Now, the big question is this, and I did consult with one of my Washington legal friends over this. What does it mean about Karl Rove going back in front of the grand jury today? Really, I'm told it could mean two things. It kind of all rests upon how he was asked or who asked him to come, how he got there. That's what it depends on. If the prosecutor was the one who instigated this visit today of Rove, that might mean that the prosecutor thinks he doesn't have enough for an indictment. That's what that might mean. On the other hand, if it was Rove's lawyer or Rove who asked to come back in front of the grand jury, that might be just them flailing about trying to avoid an indictment. I hear that it was Rove that asked to go back. That's what I hear. Actually, I heard from four people on this, and three of them said that they thought Rove asked to go back in front of the grand jury, which would be bad news for Rove. What you're doing in that case is going back and kind of begging him to leave you alone. And one of the people thought that most likely it was Fitzgerald who asked him to come back in one more time because Fitzgerald doesn't think he's got enough on him. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Maybe Christmas will come early. I don't know. Going to be interesting to see what happens with the Karl Rove mess. And if any of you get an update on that during the show, well, be sure and let me know. Love to know. We got Libby's trial is postponed until after the election. Have you seen how they're doing the ethics reform bill? The lobbying reform? Putting everything off till after the election? God, these guys are amazing. And I mean from both parties. I mean, the puppies are in control right now, to be sure. But, you know, Hastert, for example. Hastert quoted as saying, private travel has been abused by some, and I believe we need to put an end to it. That was January when he said that. But now he wanted to ban trips under this new House bill, but they just suspended it until December 15th, until after the election. That's right. They can develop a new recommendation. Before the election, they're all going to say, yeah, don't you worry, folks. Don't you worry. We're going to take care of these guys that are abusing. Don't you worry. But we are going to wait until after the election to do it, okay? Oh, they talk a good game now. They talk a great game now. We're gonna wait till after the election. So don't get all excited about it. But believe us, folks. Believe that. You know, would we lie? You know, flights on corporate jets, no problem. The bill wouldn't permit corporate lobbyists to tag along on corporate jets. But other corporate officials are now welcome aboard while the lawmakers get the benefit of private jets at the cost of a first-class ticket. They're gonna make this as easy as possible because when it comes right down to it, you're in the damn one of these guys, hardly any, maybe a handful, that wants to give up all these little goodies that they get from the lobbyists. Said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. I think K Street ought to be bulldozed and make it into a park or a bunch of fast food restaurants. I would not allow, were I the emperor of the world, I would not allow $1, not one single penny, to be paid to any congressman or senator or president, any political campaign of any kind for anything, for nothing, for not as a contribution to a politician's charity, not a contribution to his campaign, not for the presidential inauguration, nothing. Nothing. Not $1 from any corporation. Lobbyist, forget it. Get rid of them all. If you want to go in and talk to your congressman or senator, you get in the line with the rest of us. Joe Citizen's allowed to be in that line, and then you from Dow Chemical can get in line too if you want to, but you're not going to be a paid lobbyist to go in there and talk on behalf of some big company and pay the congressman to get your way. That's the Guy James platform. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a moment or two.
Thousands die. What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. Sovereign. It's, you're you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Yes, indeed, and welcome back. Glad to have everybody back with me after the break. As promised, I told you we were going to have Robert Perry on with us today, and we're going to discuss the new article that he has in Consortium News. And by the way, I know most of you visit that website anyway, consortiumnews.com. Great site, and great writer, Robert Perry. Robert, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We've actually get requests now and then from folks to and that they'd like to have on the show, and you're one of them. And some people who wanted to discuss this article, Bush brandishes jail time at critics. It seems as though our administration is getting serious about punishing people who are saying things that they don't like.
Right. I think there's been an effort to sort of put a marker down for people who have been speaking up in various ways. And I think the Bush administration liked the way it was a few years back when there was a lot less questioning, frankly, going on. There was a lot more readiness to accept what the administration was saying. And now that's beginning to crumble. And I think especially with the administration looking forward possibly to its options on Iran, it would like to sort of recreate that situation where everyone basically stayed in line.
Yeah, if you spoke out whatsoever, if you stepped out of line at all on the run-up to the Iraq War, you were called anti-American, un-American, and
traitor.
All that. And traitor, yeah, and seditionist and all. And I see that word sedition is starting to come back up again. I think it was Tony Blankley the other day that brought up about sedition trials for people.
It's almost like they're trying to dream up ways to make dissent or disagreement criminal, instead of saying, "Hey, that's the American way. We're supposed to, you know, we want to have as full and vibrant a debate as possible on these important matters." The goal seems to be just to shut people up and try to find ways to take people's disagreeing with the president and making it into some kind of crime.
Well, it seems to me that in every administration, if they set the bar where they want to set it at right now, the federal prisons would be chock full of people. I don't think it'd be big enough to hold everyone that passed out. So even people in this administration.
Right. I mean, you're now seeing people inside the CIA, people inside the military, places where they really are loath to say anything that might be considered critical of the president. But they, many of them feel they have to speak out a bit more, and maybe because in the case of the military, they're seeing we're now almost 2,400 American soldiers dead. I think some of the generals feel they should have spoken up more earlier, and they're regretting that. They also see the possibility of another military expansion into Iran, and they are alarmed. So I think that's sort of the backdrop of much of what you're seeing is whether or not the Bush administration and some of the neoconservative advisors the president has, whether they will get their way and have a free rein to do pretty much what they wish, or whether there'll be some constraints, partly by informing the American people and bringing out some of the doubts that are held by people now throughout the administration, as well as in Congress. And really, the American public, I think, has been leading much of this. There's been much more of a surge around the country of a desire to have a full-scale debate and questioning of some of these policies. In Washington, there's been much more of a keep your head down and try to avoid the trouble, both from the Democrats and the Republicans, throughout the bureaucracy until recently. The American people seem to be the ones who are wanting to have more of an old-fashioned kind of let's get the facts out and work it out. We certainly see with the president's poll numbers going down that there's increasing doubt about his leadership.
Well, the part that really baffles me is the recent group of generals. I think there are maybe seven now. Perhaps an eighth one has joined us in the last couple of days. But seven generals who have been faithful servants for the United States, many, 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 many years of service and attained the highest ranks that you get, as generals. And they've spoken out against this, and it just completely baffles me that people on the right would look at these people as some sort of traitors now when all they're doing is speaking out because they love their country and they owe the truth to their country. It just baffles me.
Right. These are retired generals, of course. They really did bite their tongue until they left. Clearly, there were serious doubts many of them had about trying to carry out this mission in Iraq. Many of them didn't really support doing it, at least not with the numbers of troops they were given and the kind of thought and care that was taken going into it. I think that what they've seen is a kind of a rashness on the part of the civilians, many of whom avoided service in Vietnam when they had a chance to serve. While these generals obviously were then young soldiers, young officers, and now these men now in their getting closer to retirement age have decided that they can't send more young men to their death without when these things have been done in a less than effective way, when a war is being fought without the careful kind of consideration that wars should get. There was that, there were some comments from people like General Zinni, who was retired before the war, and he at the time, back in 2002, was one of the voices saying, this may not be a very good idea. It's not at the top of our list in terms of concerns about national security. He had, I think, down in seven, eight, nine in his list of what was important, that is the change of government in Iraq. He didn't think it was something that the U.S. should have invested so much in, and I think that was a feeling shared by many of the generals, but they went ahead and did their duty, and now they're out of the military, and they're speaking up, and it is ironic that we're now seeing even dedicated military officers being accused of sedition or mutiny or whatever the phrases are being thrown about now.
Oh, yeah, and I saw Zinni actually get angry the other night, and I didn't blame him. He's being accused of being a seditionist, and he said, how is it that someone that's never worn the uniform in battle, never felt the sting of battle, is going to sit and call me a traitor to my country? And he, you know, he got fairly well upset over it, and I don't blame him. Here where we're broadcasting from, we have kind of a connection. Porter Goss lived for many years just a couple of miles from where I'm sitting right now, and he seems to be the stealth CIA director. You never hear much from Porter Goss. What do you think's up with that? Tenet we heard from all the time.
Well, I think Porter Goss is one of it's an unusual choice for director of CIA. You know, for many, many years, the CIA was took pride in having a director who was apolitical, or not their politics being not well known. They were mostly professionals at their craft. The first real break in that came in actually 1976 when George Bush Sr. who had been the Republican National Committee chairman, was named head of the CIA by President Ford. And then we've seen it going back and forth, but mostly we've seen generally intelligence professionals running the CIA over the over its history. Porter Goth obviously was had been in the CIA in his earlier years and then was in Congress, where he was known as a fairly partisan Republican. And so for him to be put in was, I think, going back to that idea of having a more political type of running the CIA, you know, someone more partisan, someone more considered on board with the president's policies. And that's a dangerous thing for the CIA, because the CIA, while it is it's part of the executive branch, especially on the analytical side, it's had a history, or it's supposed to have had a history of telling the government very objectively and honestly, as best it can, what's going on, not slanting the information to please one side or the other. So to have someone who's considered partisan in that position, it continues to jeopardize that ideal of having an intelligence analytical division that just tells it like it is.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I absolutely think that's a position that if somehow we could make it politically absolutely nonpartisan and neutral, that would be a great thing. I guess it's going to be hard to avoid. Of course, he was well connected with Dick Cheney.
Cheney recruited him for that job.
Yes. Where do you think this is going to go with Mary McCarthy?
Well, I think obviously the facts have to be ascertained. She denies that she was the source for Dana Priest's stories in the Washington Post relating to the so-called black sites, the secret prisons that were placed in Eastern Europe and parts of Asia. But again, this is there are a couple of these issues that where the administration has claimed that these are serious breaches of national security. And I guess I just can't follow that. You know, I've been a journalist here for a long time, since 1977. I've covered intelligence really since the early 1980s. And I think all of us in Washington, and this includes even us journalists, are always concerned about not doing things that would be harmful to the national security in terms of putting out secrets that that might make for a hot story, but would really cause some real danger to people. Some of these issues are not like that. It's not like disclosing when the American troops are going to hit the beaches. This is whether or not the U.S. should have secret prisons, whether people should be tortured in those prisons, or at least that the prisons should be outside all jurisdiction. The International Red Cross can't visit them. The UN has no idea about them. So it's really an issue of whether or not the United States wants to go in that direction. And that is a legitimate issue for debate. Now, some people are going to argue that the U.S. should, that torture is okay, and that it shouldn't be a problem. But a lot of Americans feel otherwise. They feel that torture is just not something the United States does. And so in that case, the kinds of stories that the administration now says should not have gotten out there are in reality stories, I think, that the American people have a legitimate interest in debating. The same is true of the warrantless wiretaps. The Bush administration claims that that's been a great breach of security, but it's, you know, the Al-Qaeda folks have always known that the United States had the capability of bugging their phones and eavesdropping. That is not a secret, and even Attorney General Gonzalez, when he testified about this in February of this year, acknowledged that, in this case, the enemy did know that we were trying to listen in on their calls. And his only point was, well, if you have it in the papers too much, it kind of reminds them. But that's a different kind of question than whether or not this is a breach of national security. So I think the administration's kind of getting quite exercised in claiming this seriousness of national security concerns when the concerns aren't really that high.
Right.
And I think these are the issues we're talking about. And if And if someone in the CIA or elsewhere came to that conclusion, I don't think it's the kind of grave concern that Porter Goss is trying to make it out as at this point. It doesn't, these are not, these are, as I say, these are not the kinds of disclosures that put American soldiers in harm's way or something like that, which I think all of us would agree is should be treated very, very judiciously.
Well, you're exactly right. And some of the stories that went around, some of the play acting that took place on TV by some of the administration's officials, they made it sound like Zakawi and Bin Laden are going, oh my God, guys, look out! They're here. We just found out they're monitoring our phone calls. What are we going to do? I mean, they made it sound like they all of a sudden found this out. You're exactly right. If they didn't know that, they weren't accomplished.
Well, they did know that, and they did structure the September 11th attacks were structured in such a way as to avoid international communication. That's why they would send people in pre-positioning them, sending couriers, doing more physical kinds of contacts to avoid electronic communications. Now, there was some of that. It wasn't entirely done without electronic communications, but it wasn't like they didn't know that the U.S. was trying to find out where they were and what they were up to.
Yeah, I highly agree. I think there's been some great play acting on that. They made it all of a sudden sound like it was just a horrible breach of national security and we're going to have to scrap the whole program, and some great acting going on. How far do you think the administration will go with this? Do you think they will with this McCarthy thing and all, will they put a concentrated effort now with the public scrutiny, with the magnifying glass on them now? Do you think they'll really make a huge issue of this?
There's a big question here, I think, of how far the administration will go at this point. Clearly, they're not in as politically an advantageous position as they were even a year or so ago. And last poll, I think, showed President Bush at a 32% approval. If you look at state by state, we did a piece in March that was, I think, Bush was down to 7 states with a net positive. In April, that was down to 4 states with a net positive. Even some states that were strong red states, like Texas, he had a double-digit negative. I mean, so he's not quite in the position of strength. But sometimes when politicians are in a position of weakness, it gets even scarier. Sometimes politicians will lash out when they feel cornered, and that's sort of the question that I think we'll see play out. Karl Rove is today before the grand jury in the Plaim case again today for, I think, the 5th time. Whether or not that leads to more indictments, there has been a scandal around that's gone on for quite a while. So sometimes when administrations are cornered, they act more aggressively. And sometimes, but other times, they try to look for accommodation. We'll see how this one handles it. This administration, one tends to look, and if you want to bet, usually you bet on them being pretty aggressive, because they certainly have been that. But we'll see.
Let me ask you. I've had my antenna up all day long concerning the Rove matter and the grand jury. Any talk around your office about it today? What's happening? We hear that he's back in front of the grand jury today?
Well, I don't. I've got no insights on what's happened today, but I do think that what's one thing that's very interesting that has not gotten much attention is the role of President Bush in this. Clearly, while Rove is an important figure and Libby was behind the scenes an important figure too, he's now facing indictment. He was on from Vice President Cheney's staff, but the big questions relate to Cheney and Bush. And one thing that has been overlooked is that after this issue of this exposing the CIA officer Valerie Plame became an issue in the summer of 2003, it was under the review then of Attorney General Ashcroft, and I think the administration was probably confident that nothing would happen, that there wouldn't be much of a push there, that the reporters wouldn't divulge sources and so forth, and it was all going to sort of go away. So President Bush, in September of 2003, makes a public statement where he says, in effect, that he is encouraging anyone who knows anything about this to come forward so it can all be put behind us. What we now know is that he knew a great deal at that time. He was play acting. He had set in motion he now says, the some of the selective leaks of information that involved that lay that included, whether he approved or not, included the disclosure of Valerie Plame. So he knew that he had set his he sent his people out to do this, to sort of put the word out with reporters to go after Joe Wilson, Plame's husband. He pretended he didn't know about this. He was essentially misleading the American people. Now, then what happens in the end of 2003 is that Ashcroft recuses himself because of conflicts of interest. It's turned over to Patrick Fitzgerald, the U.S. attorney in Chicago, who's more of a disinterested party. He then starts pursuing it more aggressively, and he calls Bush to testify. There's an interview, basically, a deposition, whatever you might call it. But that occurs in June of 2004.
Not under oath, right?
It's not under oath, but still, it's a legal matter. You cannot lie to a federal prosecutor or the FBI.
That'd be obstruction, right?
Well, it'd be obstruction. It'd be also lying to a federal investigator.
Okay.
You can't do it. And certainly, if you're president, you're not supposed to
yeah.
do it. And the and Bush hires a private criminal attorney, James Sharp. And we don't know what happened in that 70 minutes. Did Bush continue to be misleading? Did he continue to say what he said in September of 2003? I don't know anything about this. If anyone knows anything about this? You know, we now know that was false. But did he keep it up in 2004, or did he start telling Fitzgerald the truth? If he tried to continue his deception with Fitzgerald, there could be a problem here for him. And it's interesting. Also, Cheney had a similar interview, and we don't know what Cheney said. So I think what is behind much of this interest right now is not just what happens to Scooter Libby and even Karl Rove, but whether or not this case goes up the chain of command.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a fascinating journey to follow all this. It really is. There's so much of it now. It's hard to stay on the trail of just one of these stories, let alone you know, the different facets of it that run just willy-nilly all over Washington. I don't know how you guys do it. Robert, I want to thank you so very much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I'm looking at a chat room right now where a bunch of the listeners are on, and they're just enjoying your conversation tremendously, and I know I'll get a lot of email about it as well. And consortiumnews.com, for all of you that want to read some serious material, that's where you should go. And Robert is one of the finest writers you will find in Washington, and I want to thank you so much, Robert, for being on the
program.
Well,
thank you for having me.
Thanks. Yeah, Robert Perry. He's been on the program, I don't know, 3-4 times over the years, and he's the type of guy that when you go to Washington, you just want to pull up a chair, sit down, and just start talking to him, and you know, throw something in the conversation now and then that you want to find out about, and let him go on about it. He is seemingly everywhere in Washington, seems to know something about everything. And he's just straight up about it. He's not very partisan at all. He's not very partisan at all. I mean, the truth is the truth, and that's what he's after. And I really admire his work a great deal, and so that's why we have him on from time to time. And I hope you enjoyed that. And you might tell your friends that missed it to take a look for that on the archives. Robert Perry, consortiumnews.com. And that latest article, once again, is Bush Brandishes Jail Time in Critics. It's a great article. It really is. How far will they go with this? How far will they go? Is it going to go to the top? I've said all along that it would. In the Valerie Plame thing, the day it was mentioned, I said it went to the top. We're going to see. I didn't bet anybody on it. I kind of wish I would have now. But, you know, Robert just brought up a very interesting point. What did George Bush and Dick Cheney say to the prosecutors? Even while under oath, he's exactly right. It's obstruction of justice, and lying to a federal prosecutor is a crime whether you're under oath or not. So where will it go? How far will it go? Would this dare take down a president of the United States? Are we going to find out shortly? Is this why Bush has been acting so weird? And pardon me for saying that, but have you noticed that? Have you noticed that Bush's behavior in the past several months is getting just a little more and more weird all the time. I mean weird. Not just strange or goofy. I mean, he's always been goofy. But I think he's been acting just downright strange. His mannerisms that he has, I mean, they're always, you know, silly looking. But he's had that look to me. I'm a psych major, and he's just had that look to me like, man, there's something over my shoulder, and I don't know when it's going to hit me in the head. I mean, he's just had that look to me for a long, long time. And, you know, maybe I'm dreaming. I don't know. But I don't know. I have to wonder whether he's, of course, you know, they've shown a great amount of hubris and arrogance as well throughout this whole thing. Do they think no matter what they've said, they can get away with it? Do they go that far, do you think? I wonder. I would really love to know how far the Bush administration thinks they can go with criminal behavior. And do they really believe, as we talked about yesterday with one of the gentlemen, do they really believe that if the president does it, that it's legal no matter what it is? I wonder about that. I've always been curious if they really and truly believe that. I don't know. That'd be the greatest amount of hubris that you could ever have, I think. Had something I was going to say regarding that. Now it slipped my mind what it was. I see a cockiness, and I heard Laura Ingraham today, and forgive me. I know. Some of you are going to say, what the hell was he doing listening to Laura Ingraham? She makes fun of everybody that she possibly can, and no matter who it is, on the left or on the right. I mean, she's had a great deal of fun making fun of Arlen Specter lately, because Arlen happened to say something that, you know, about criminal behavior or outlandish behavior or improper behavior on the part of the Republicans, and they don't like it when anybody speaks out. You know, you've got to be one of those people that toes the party line no matter what. And, you know, I just hate people like that. I really do. I've known a few people in my lifetime. Like, have you? Have you ever known anybody that toes their party line no matter what? I mean, during that, there was a couple of people during the Clinton administration thing that the impeachment that made me sick, and they were Democrats. Well, I'm not going to say anything about Bill Clinton. By God, he's the best president I ever had, and so what? He had this little thing that's nothing, and you know, come on. Come on, let's all live in the real world. When your guy's wrong and he does something wrong, just say it and let's move on. But if it happens to be criminal behavior, like I think some of this is, why, we need to take pause, stop and take a look at the situation, and do whatever needs to be done to keep it from ever happening again. And I think federal prosecutors, if in fact what we think has happened here in this Valerie Plame incident and all, if, in fact, they have committed criminal behavior, I hope to God they're prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law to set an example that nobody in their right mind would ever try it again. I don't care if it's a Republican, it's a Democrat. We heard Melanie on here yesterday from Crew talking about, you know, even a Democrat involved in this Jack Abramoff. I don't care if he's a Democrat or not. If he's done wrong, goodbye, Charlie. That's the way I feel about it. I'm not going to back anybody in the Democratic Party that's done criminal behavior and comes out and it's proven. No, sir. No, sir. Never. Never, never, never. You know, we got Rostenkowski. We've got Trafficant. Guys that have gone to the pen. They've done wrong. They deserve to be punished. Are no different than Republicans. Republicans need to be punished. Democrats need to be punished. And I think no one needs to be punished any more than a public servant that has gone wrong and betrayed the people who elected him. I think they deserve the swiftest and toughest justice of anybody. A betrayal of the public trust, in my opinion, there's not much that gets much worse than that. Have thousands, millions of people think you're a good guy and you're going to help them out and do what you could to be a good politician, and you act like some of them do. No, sir. Hey, we're going to pause for the news at the top of the hour. We hope they're ready. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
workers, purchase new boats and helicopters for the Coast Guard, and build a fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. In Washington, Fox TV anchor Tony Snow has been appointed as the next White House press secretary. Snow was a speechwriter for former President George Bush Sr. Outgoing White House press secretary Scott McClellan says Snow expects to start in the beginning of May. In Egypt, two suicide bombers blew themselves up near Cairo. No other injuries were reported. Security sources were quoted as saying the recent attacks may have been carried out by local militants. In Baghdad, U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice are meeting with Iraq's new government. Rumsfeld says the visit is designed to show support for the new prime minister and cabinet. Snow and Rice expressed optimism, but said it would take some time to disarm Shiite militias. America's top military commander in Iraq says 30,000 U.S. troops could come home this year, but that depends on whether the country continues to develop a stable government and the insurgency grows no stronger. He said they may return by the end of the year. A recent CNN poll says more than half of Americans think it was a mistake to invade Iraq. The survey's results differ little from polls taken in the past 3 months, indicating President Bush's public relations efforts have not increased support for the war. Iran's supreme leader said today his country would retaliate against U.S. interests around the world if the U.S. attacks. The White House says a preemptive attack is an option if diplomacy fails. In Washington, White House top political advisor Karl Rove will go before a federal grand jury today. He'll testify for the fifth time about a leak in the identity of former CIA operative Valerie Plame. Rove's appearance is voluntary. He has not been notified of any impending indictment against him in connection with the case. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he's ready to begin peace negotiations with Israel. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Quality News.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In March, sales of new homes took the biggest jump in 13 years. Some analysts say the nearly 14% increase can be credited to builders slashing home prices to offset higher mortgage rates and a backlog of houses on the market. Lacking health insurance is no longer a working-class problem. That's according to analysts with the Commonwealth Fund in New York, which found 41% of working-age middle-class Americans were uninsured for at least part of 2005. That's up from 28% in 2001. Unions are planning to rally today across the country to protest Walmart's health care coverage plans. Walmart officials say the protests ignore the fact that the company created 225,000 jobs last year and provides above-average pay and benefits for the retail sector. Health insurer WellPoint says its quarterly profits grew mostly due to increased membership. The company says operating revenue rose 26% to $13.6 billion. Big Oil today said today that consolidation is necessary in order for the U.S. to remain competitive in the global economy. The defensive stance was in response to a bill now moving through the Senate that would limit future mergers. Lightsweet crude is $72.80 a barrel. Near the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 71 points, NASDAQ up 3 points, S&P 500 also up 3 points. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
God bless America. your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Back with you after the news. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We're promised everybody we would talk about gasoline prices and, the whole doggone situation going on with that today. And as promised, we have got the Director of Environmental Policy, Anna Unruh Cohen, with the Center for American Progress. And if she doesn't know about gas prices and what's going on with it, I don't know who would. So, Anna, are you with us?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you along with us this afternoon. I know many, many people are dazed and confused and bewildered over the price of gasoline. We all know it's sky high right now. What's the reason for it?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One is that this is a big old world, and lots of people want to use gasoline to drive around in it. And our leadership has really let us down in becoming a more efficient country and using less. We've heard talk for a long time from this president about getting off oil, about bringing on alternatives, and he really hasn't put anything down to back up his rhetoric. We need to change that.
I haven't seen any evidence at all of any meaningful conservation or alternative fuel research going on. Is there a lot behind the scenes that we don't see?
Well, there's stuff happening, and especially recently in the private sector, investment is happening, and people are beginning to see this as a real answer, an important part of the equation, and money is flowing that way, but it's going to take a while. And the president is in a perfect position and has been since after 9/11 to ask Americans to conserve, to buy the most efficient vehicles, to face up to the fact that our addiction to oil, as he rightfully called it, hinders our national security, hinders our ability to support American values around the world.
Well, concerning the prices that we have right now, we've heard all sorts of excuses why they're where they're at right now. We've heard about the shortage of additives, the shortage of refinery capacity. I for one want to ask you a question. I know you're an expert on this, and I have seen precious little going back in from the oil companies into new refineries, new refining capacities. But the story you always hear from the right and from big oil is, oh, gee, the environmental restrictions are keeping us from us. We couldn't do it if we want to. Is that true?
That the environmental restrictions have almost nothing to do with this. For the past decade, refining hasn't made the oil companies a lot of money, so they didn't put any money into it. And basically, their capacity to refine has caught up with demand, or demand has caught up with their capacity to refine. But they were able to meet that demand all through the 90s while still dealing with environmental policies that were cleaning up fuel. And to let oil companies off the hook for cost for cleaning up their fuel, that just pushed the cost of that onto the public, onto people who are asthmatics, onto the elderly, onto everyone who's affected by smoggy summer days caused by pollution from cars.
Well, certainly. And last year, for example, we're hearing that ExxonMobil, for example, I believe the figure is $36 billion in profit.
Yep.
You could build quite a few refineries for that kind of money, couldn't you?
Well, I think so. The other interesting thing for ExxonMobil in 2005 is it turns out they spent more money buying back shares of their company, which just makes them more profitable, than they sunk into capital investments in exploration, in refining, in research and development. And I can't say I can't say if that's true for all the major oil companies, but it sure looks like Exxon is more interested in increasing their short-term profits than maintaining long-term viability for American consumers.
What role do the oil companies worldwide, your Shell and your BP and mm-hmm. ExxonMobil, what role are they taking in research for alternative fuels in for the future?
Well, they haven't done all that much specifically on alternative fuels. Shell and BP especially have been looking at alternative energy for more for electricity options. They haven't been doing too much on extending the fuel supply other than pointing the fingers at Detroit that they should build more efficient vehicles.
Well, yeah, there's probably little question that Detroit could build more efficient vehicles. It'd probably be a lot more costly. But I had a conversation a week or two ago with a really nice British gentleman who works for one of the big oil companies in exploration. And it seems to me that if you talk to 50 oil company people, you hear 50 different stories about what is the situation with peak oil mm-hmm. and when it's approaching and the reserves that are left and where they're left. You're an expert on this. How definitive is the case for peak oil? How much can we predict it?
Well, it's one of those things that you usually can see in hindsight, but leading up to it, there's no question that we're moving into, you know, the oil that they call sort of light sweet crude that comes out of primarily Saudi Arabia. You could almost pour that into your engine and run, but there's a whole world full of oil that is pretty yucky, and you have to really work at it to get anything that can run a car. And what we're running out of is that really nice oil that's easy to turn into gasoline, and we're switching more and more to this harder oil. And that's why the CEO of Chevron has said, you know, cheap oil is gone, that we've lost it, and it's more expensive and harder to deal with as we go after, you know, every last drop of it. And there's a lot of reasons to get off of it rather than just than peak oil. I mean, we'll increase our national security, we'll increase our climate security, we'll help potentially farmers, we'll probably create new industries for new types of vehicles. So there's a whole bunch of reasons to really reduce our reliance on oil, period.
What about the Chavez situation? The quality of oil coming from Venezuela is it light sweet crude, or is it the more yucky oil, as you put it?
I'm not an expert on exactly what's coming out of Venezuela, but I do believe it's not that great. That it needs some significant refining to get it to what we want, both for public health reasons and what works best in our automobiles.
And so we're seeing now that the administration is going to put pressure on to ease environmental standards.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to ease the restrictions on Detroit. That's a step backwards for us, isn't it?
I really think it is. And it's interesting, yesterday Red Cavani, who's president of the American Petroleum Institute, said that the transition from MTBE to ethanol, which are two additives that we put into to gasoline to make it more cleaner burning, but that transition was going well. And so from where, you know, listening to him, it doesn't sound like he really needs the president to waive environmental regulations, and the public certainly doesn't. You know, the grandmothers, the kids with asthma will all suffer this summer if we waive those regulations.
Well, I had Mr. Bush say one of the most interesting statements about ethanol the other day. I'm a Midwest farm boy myself, and mm-hmm. I heard Mr. Bush say, after all, there's only so much ethanol we can produce. We have to eat some of the corn, you know.
Right, I saw that same quote.
I don't know. I don't know. I found it amusing.
Well, there's, I mean, what's really exciting in ethanol are the new types and new sources that we may be able to produce it from. And, you know, there's a couple of companies that are trying to build, you know, these first plants of the quote-unquote cellulosic ethanol, which is ethanol created from sort of waste products. So you take the corn away and you sell it so Mr. Bush can eat it at his barbecue, but the leaves and the stalk you can convert into ethanol as well. And that's where some of the really exciting things are going in ethanol.
Sure, sure. Well, it's going to be interesting. I was talking to a gentleman in Washington the other day and was saying, you know, we really need, it was his position, that we really need to save all the oil we can, which I certainly agree with, and I know you do as well. We've got to conserve, because although we very well might, and we have every indication that we will come up with a good alternative fuel for our vehicles and so forth, mm-hmm. what we really need the petroleum for in the future is all of the other byproducts that we use it for. And people are thinking, oh my God, I won't be able to drive my car. But they're not considering the fact of all the other things that petroleum is used for.
That's true. I mean, we use petroleum, you know, all the plastics that we use, all of those things have a pretty significant fossil fuel base, whether it's natural gas or petroleum. And so, you know, those will be important. The good thing on the biomass side, though, is that some of those we can substitute. We can use plants to substitute for some of the base product that we're using oil for and natural gas for. In fact, prior to World War II, we actually used plants for a lot of similar products that once we discovered these big oil fields, both in our own country and in the Middle East, we converted to using fossil fuels to make. So it's kind of back to the future in a way. We need to go back to making some of those products from plants like we used to, but in new and more efficient ways.
So to sum it all up then, your position is conservation first.
That's what we can do today.
And then let's worry about the alternative fuels that let's be doing at
right.
the same
time.
Right, we
have to. I mean, in the short term, what we can do is be wise about how we drive. We can put in some biofuels to stretch our gasoline volume and hopefully ramp that up. But we need to be getting to more efficient vehicles, vehicles that allow different alternatives, you know, things like plug-in hybrids. So you have electricity as well as a liquid fuel competing to move somebody around town. And we need leadership to get us there. And that's really what we're lacking in Washington right now.
Yeah, we certainly are. I agree. Anna Andrew Cohen, thank you so much for being with us on the program today. Is the Director of Environmental Policy at the Center for American Progress, a great website if you folks can visit. We're so grateful to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. A lot to think about with the price of gasoline, and like she mentioned, it's good to know. I hadn't considered some of that, not being the premier scientist in the world. I did have a fellow the other day talk to me about, we'll find a way around gasoline, but have you considered just sitting in the studio you're in right now, looking around at all the petroleum products are here? Ooh, yeah. I look at the soundproofing material on the walls. I see the plastic on the computer. I see the knobs on the mixers and the phone banks and, just petroleum everywhere you look. So it's important that we conserve. And the gentleman that wrote us that letter that we started off the program today, I guess he hadn't considered that. I don't know. Well, we're going to take a brief pause, and we'll be back in just a minute or two, and we'll take your phone calls, 866-546-5254.
Destroy Iran. That's Saddam took away the soil, and Daddy Bush lost all of his oil. Daddy Bush attacked Saddam. He tried to take him out with a bomb. Saddam tried to have Daddy slain. Now little Georgia's got him on the brain. Little Georgia's gonna kick Iraqi ass and steal all his oil and gas. Tell me, please, what are we fighting for? Tell me, please, what are we dying for? Tell me, please, what are we fighting for? Georgie takes us to the brink. Inspectors ain't found nothing yet. Osama vanished underground, and Bush just needs a sheik to pound. Saddam will be overthrown. Georgie has to do it all alone. The power's going to his head. He told the UN to go drop dead. He engineered a White House coup.
Impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true.
Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, yeah, we hope you will join us, 866-546-5254. It's a toll-free number, and we hope you'll give us a call and join in on the program today. After all, this is your program. We'd like to say to everybody, hello to everybody over at Democrats.com today and SmirkingChimp.com and the good folks at DemocraticUnderground.com and all our web friends from all around the country and all around the world. So good to have you with us, and I do so appreciate all the great emails we get, even the ones that aren't so great. And we get those. Oh, yes, we do. I got quite a few emails yesterday, and I feel that I need to explain something to you. We had a gentleman by the name of Feynman on yesterday. Anyway, you heard the interview with him, and he was talking about the illegality of the domestic spying of the Bush administration, and he made the comment. He is a Republican, and he made the comment that he had voted for Bush twice, and that if he ran again, he'd vote for him again, and here he's trying to get the man censured. Now, I wasn't sleeping when he said that. I want you to know that. And I had called and asked this man to be on the program, and he consented to be on the program. If I would have been smart, I probably would have just jumped all over him for that comment. How could you talk about censuring a man for breaking the law, possibly, here? And you did vote for, you did want Clinton impeached for his lie about sex, but, you know, the whole thing was, I thought about it for a minute. I should jump on this guy right now for that, but I thought, well, he was nice enough to be on the program, and if he'd have called me and started in on that, why, I probably would have said something. But I felt like I needed to explain that to you. A lot of you that know me better than that thought, what? He let him say that, and he didn't say anything? I apologize. I should have jumped on that with both feet. Ah, gee whiz, we have the phone lights lighting up, and then they went off there. I don't know what happened all of a sudden. If you're trying to call back. We'll get to you right away. We really will. Have you been out filling up your car with gas? Have you got to $50 yet? Have you got a great big car that holds, if you hold anything over, 16 gallons or so, you're going to be putting $50 in it if it's clear empty. And you get some of these bigger cars that hold a lot more than that. Imagine one of these great big SUVs with two tanks on it, what they must cost to fill up right now.
Whoa.
Big news. Heard anything yet about Karl Rove getting indicted? What do you think? Is he going to get indicted? I have to say I hope so. I really do. I think it's pretty obvious to anyone right now that's got any kind of gray matter in the old skull that there's been a lot of shenanigans go on in the White House that have gone unpunished as of yet. And it's time that this whole thing gets investigated and shake it out and find out what's wrong in there. God knows they sure looked over Clinton good enough. And I don't feel that way because of what happened to Clinton. I really don't. I think it's a shame that it's come to this where we feel compelled to have to investigate a bunch of politicians. I think it's really a rotten shame that it's come to that. And I wish these people were all above reproach. But unfortunately, they're not. It's an amazing thing what power and money does to people, isn't it? Not ever having either. I guess I wouldn't know, but I've seen the effects of it on people, power and money, and it's a crime. It really is. And there are people from all over the spectrum right now disgusted with the situation. Republicans and Democrats. You know, I don't want everybody to think, and I don't think everybody does think that this is totally some sort of a partisan war going on right now. God knows there's a lot of Republicans that are just fed up with George Bush. And I doubt they'll go out and vote for a Democrat during the next election, but they might stay home unless they come up with some kind of a really great candidate, what I see in the field so far. I don't know. What do you think Romney has a chance? He's Mr. Squeaky Clean up there. Think he's got any chance at all? You think Giuliani's got any chance at all? If Giuliani gets the nod for the Republicans, I'll declare the Republican Party the biggest bunch of hypocrites that ever lived on the face of the earth if they give him the nomination. After all their family values and their good Republican morals and all that, and they're thinking about putting Rudy Giuliani in there. And damn it, I am so tired of it, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I am so tired of hearing about the great hero Rudy Giuliani and 9/11. Would somebody please tell me what that man did that any mayor in the United States would not have done under similar situations? What did he do that was so extraordinary? Did he do anything that was something special no one else would have done? As a mayor, he went to a great number of the funerals. My God, I think any mayor would have done that. Any mayor should have done that, and he did what he should do. He showed his respect to the police and the fire and the people that have died in New York. That was expected of him. He was on the scene right after it happened. Yeah? Okay. Wouldn't any mayor have been on the scene afterwards? Him and his Bernie, I can't think of Bernie's last name now, his chief of police that end up being shamed and humiliated. Carrick, Bernard Carrick. I still think that was the biggest lie, one of the biggest lies I've heard in several years at the Republican convention when Rudy Giuliani was giving his speech and people were just lapping it up. And, you know, the 9/11 convention is what they should have called it. That's what it was. It was a shameful, shameful Republican convention on the backs of the 3,000 people who died in 9/11 because they used it. They used it for political advantage over and over and over again, and especially Giuliani did when he got up and gave his speech. And I don't know why I remembered all this long, but he got up and he made this comment that he looked at Bernie Carrick when all this was going on and said, "Thank God George Bush is the president of the United States." I'm sorry, Rudy. I never bought that one. Never. Hey, let's go to the phones. Who do we have on the phone?
You got Dave.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Really great. And as always, I'm loving your program. I think two things on what you're discussing. If Feingold can be bought, you can believe the offer is being made. That's my guess on that. Everybody seems to feel he's a truly highly credible human being, and that ain't going to happen. But there's another theory that says everybody has their price, and this administration will try to buy him. The other thing with your last guest there, I get to think it's more than a coincidence that the oil executives are making so many billions of dollars and we're having to pay more at the pump. I think there's more than a coincidence there.
Absolutely.
There may be other factors at play, but I got to say that is a real big one. In obscene profits is where it's at for them.
Oh, and it's really humorous, Dave, to sit back and see the excuses that are being made. You know, we've seen Bush say, well, you know, we can't get enough ethanol. We don't have enough refinery capacity. We don't have this. We don't have... face it, Mr. Bush. A lot of it's just plain old, good old-fashioned American gouging.
Very much so. And that's what they're all about. Just grab all the wealth of the world. I hope to end up the first billionaires in the world.
Yeah. see, what has it got to... Yeah, who will be? Of course, there's no one even close yet. But I remember I'm a little long in the tooth, and I remember when J. Paul Getty was the richest man in America, and he had like close to $1 billion, and he was America's first billionaire at the time. Actually, dollar to dollar in today's dollar, probably the Rockefellers and the Mellons and the Carnegies were all worth billions of dollars back in their days, but actual $1 billion. Who's going to be the first trillionaire? You know, we don't have anybody close, but they're working on it.
Oh yeah, and it's a just unending need. They're never going to be satisfied. I think after they've wiped out the working classes of this country, after they've just devastated the poor, they will start turning on each other. They'll be cannibalizing one another. That's the nature that they have. They want all, everything. Each one of them wants it all for themselves.
Will it get back like it was in the old feudal days? Each little king, each little fiefdom will have his own army, only they'll do it some other way now. They'll have this army of peasants that, they pay a small stipend and room and board, and they'll each have their little army going after each other. We'll have Exxon fighting against Shell, and I can see a bunch of possibilities there. I don't know.
I bet there's a high chance at some point that's going to happen. I'm still very much looking forward to tomorrow.
Yep, we're going to have Clint Curtis on tomorrow, 3:30. Yeah,
you've done your homework. You're going to have some pointed questions because you're looking for good, solid evidence, and that man is the smoking gun.
Yeah, well, I've got some good questions, and I'm hoping he can answer them. And let me alert everybody. We're going to be talking about black box voting for a good portion of the program tomorrow. And if you have any questions that you want to ask of Mr. Clint Curtis, who is probably made more claims about this than anybody, and let me say that I think he has more validity to what he says than just about anybody I've seen. If you've got some questions you want to ask him, you email them to us today, tonight, and tomorrow, because we'll want to get all the good questions in on him that we can, and I'm sure he'll enjoy answering them.
Bev Harris and Brad Freeman are two other people that deserve a Nobel Prize for the work they've done in this
area. Brad has done a lot of work on that. We're going to try and have a good program on that tomorrow. We'll do the best we can, and I know we won't. I know we won't probably solve the big mystery, but we'll make some inroads towards it. I know that.
And I believe you're going to be open to the evidence that he's going to be providing you.
I'm always open. Thanks for your call, Dave.
Thank you for being there, guy.
Yep. Bye now. Yeah. Tomorrow, Black Box Voting Day. You get your questions ready, because I want to grill this guy, Clint Curtis. He's running against State Senator Feeney here in Florida, and he's made some bodacious claims about the black box voting. I am inclined to believe him, and we're gonna test him tomorrow. And I hope you'll send in your cards and letters and emails and your questions. We want to. Definitely want to get the hard questions put to them. How many of you saw? You know, we went to talk about nonpartisan. Yeah, as you know, I'm very nonpartisan. In a way, I am. In a way, all of us are. I'm totally fair when it comes to political crime. I don't give a damn if you're a two-term president of the United States and the greatest man who ever lived, if you commit a crime while in office, anything that's serious at all, I'm not talking sex in the back room of the Oval Office, but if you do anything messing with the public the way these guys are right now or other presidents have in the past, I want you to be prosecuted. And if there are any Democrats that have done serious harm, done nasty things in this Jack Abramoff thing, send them away. I'm totally nonpartisan when it comes to that. As nonpartisan as you could be. In fact, I'll tell you the honest truth. If I were a judge and you brought the Republican and the Democrat to me, and I know a lot of people won't like this, I'd probably be harder on the Democrat sentencing than I would the Republican, because I expect truth and honesty from my Democrats. I expect it. I don't necessarily expect it from the Republicans, if you know what I mean. Especially when you got your Dick Nixon saying, if the president does it, it's legal. I really would love to know how far he would have gone with that. Now, could they have offed somebody, deep throat? Could he have shot the reporter, shot him dead in the parking lot where he met him there, Bernstein? Would they have killed people and gotten away with it? Would that have been legal? Would they have thought that, to cover up Watergate? Actually, at the time it was going on, I know there were people who did fear for their lives. I wonder. I do wonder about that. Hey, let's go back to the phone. Who do we have on the line?
Would that have been legal? Would they have thought that?
Hello.
Hello.
This is Juanita. Actually, I'm trying to turn my sound down.
Oh, okay.
I know there were people who did fear.
Okay, I got it down.
I recognize that guy in the background.
Yeah. Sort of favors you, right?
Yes, a little bit. My evil twin.
Just a wee bit.
Yes.
I wanted to tell you that I enjoyed your guests that you've been having, and yesterday, the first gentleman you were talking about on, I saw that hearing, so I was sort of prepared for him.
Ah, yes.
Because when I saw him at the hearing, I thought, oh, no, what's he going to say? I was surprised, you know. So I think you handled him quite well, and, sometimes you just have to let things like that. You can't always be in the arguing ball field, do you think?
Oh, no. I like I said, it was a matter of being respectful yesterday. He was gracious enough to come on the program.
Yeah, and he was pleasant acting. I mean, certainly I've seen him on Fox quite a bit, and I didn't like him at all, but...
Yeah, you know, if someone becomes argumentative with, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the famous incident with with Ollie North and Randy Rhodes. Well,
oh yeah,
you know,
played it.
Go, go, Randy. I mean,
amen, amen.
And I've had a couple of those episodes over the years as well. And you know, someone come on the show, and
oh yeah,
and we're treating them nice and all, and then all of a sudden they give it to you, and you think, well, all right, now here we go.
you said something about Malloy being on TV this weekend.
Yeah,
was that on?
I heard it was. Oh, yes, it was. In fact, somebody sent me the video of it. I don't think I have it handy here.
Okay, well.
I don't think I do. I've got computers sitting everywhere
I
around
like
here.
I like to hear him and Randy with on the news, and Randy's really getting her words out.
Well, she is, and Randy's a great voice. Randy's I know Randy a little bit. She's really a great person. And she gets a little bit of a bad rap sometimes. You know, people talk about how she cuts off callers and all that sort of thing. Randy is just so energetic and just so full of knowledge and stuff. She can't stand it if she's not getting it out. So I'll forgive her for that.
Well, I think she's getting better about that,
too. I think so.
You know. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about was, do you think sometime you could have people on about the energy crisis, saying how we could go about changing systems? Because for me, my electricity bill's always been one of my highest bills. I think they've put my neighbors on mine sometime.
Yeah, that happens.
And, you know, after the first of the year, they sent a letter. We're sorry. We're having to raise, you know, because of all the hurricanes and so forth.
Are you on are you on FPL there where you live?
No, I'm Tampa Electric.
Okay. Down here, South Florida. It's Florida Power and Light, and we got a...
Yeah, there's a lot of it in different areas up here, too.
Yeah, we got a big increase, too.
Yeah, and I've been very interested in solar system, and I was just wondering if maybe you could get someone to... where we could get started on that. I know... they're coming out with all kind of new innovations on that.
Well, that's a good idea. And, you know, nobody lives in any better place to take advantage of solar energy than we do.
Amen, brother.
That's right. And I've got a brother, my dear brother, who just moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and he could take advantage of that as well. Mm-hmm. Sunshine just about all the time. And
yeah, right.
Well,
but, you know, like the availability, I know that... I see some of the shows, do-it-yourself shows on TV, and they were showing how you could get, like, a tool shed. It costs about $800. You're not connected to the electric company. That costs a whole lot more to get all that connected. But
yeah.
I'm just, you know, like if we could get some kind of a start. I mean, a lot of us, I mean, you know, sometimes you just don't know what to do because, like, insurance and all that kind of junk you got just every time you turn around is the and it sure would be nice to see my light bill go down. It really would.
I see just up the road from where I live and not far from the studios here, there are a lot of solar energy panels on roofs, and they've been there for some time. It looks to me like homes that maybe were built in the 70s. And it must work for them, so they still got them up there.
Well, there in the 70s, you know, when Carter was in, they had a lot of hot water heater.
Oh yeah.
Things and
yeah.
And then some people used it for their swimming pools too.
Sure.
So they've got new products now that are flexible, you know, and they're not so big, and you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
You think you could have something like
well,
that?
Well, I most certainly will. That's a good idea. It's something everybody's interested in. That's certainly true. And
I mean, that would help out a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. Well, I've made a note of it, and we'll do our best to do that.
You know, it could be a big business, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Certainly could. It certainly could. You know, so many people that live in Florida, for example, I know here. In Lee County, Florida, and probably where you live as well, there are many, many, many people living on fixed incomes.
Well, and that's me.
Yeah, and when that old electric bill goes up, it takes a bite out of something. It's not like you're going out and making a few extra bucks because you're not. And so, yes, very, very important thing to be done.
Okay.
Thank you for your call. We'll do that as soon as we can.
And I really appreciate your other guests you've been having on.
Well, thank you. We'll have a lot of good guests on.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, so true. Energy conservation is just going to become bigger and bigger and bigger thing. And, you know, when's this all going to end? We're living in interesting times. And I wonder, what do you think? I'm inclined to think that despite all this, we may be living in one of the most interesting times in history because of the computer age, the information age and all. From that aspect, I think this is an interesting time to live. I for one, every day, I walk into our studio here, for example. We've got, three computers in here and a laptop as well. And all this wonderful electronic equipment that you're able to sit any place in the entire world and hear my voice right now. It's just fascinating. It's fascinating to me. All these little hamsters inside these things running these machines. They're magic. They really are. And it's an amazing time to live. People my age all remember the old movies and the sci-fi pictures with the big UNIVAC computers where they have an entire room filled with computers that one little laptop now has got more power than a whole room full of computers used to. It's just an interesting time, and to think that you've really got the world at your fingertips now. I never thought I'd see this day. Wouldn't have, I think of kids in school and in college today don't realize how lucky they are in that respect, at least. They're very unlucky in some other respects, but how lucky they are to have the information available at their fingertips like they do. My God, we used to have to spend hours in the library and you know, books, and it's a great thing now. It really is. Hey, had another phone call there. It disappeared. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know. Sometimes I just don't know what's going on around here. Anyway, we're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere.
They're reading all my mail. Listen on my phone. They're sneaking and they're peeking, and I'm never quite alone. They're spying and they're prying, but I shouldn't be alarmed. They're only gonna do it to keep me safe from harm. They call it Homeland Security, so they can do the things they do. But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you? They don't need a reason, they don't need a rhyme. They don't need a warrant, they don't even need a crime. It's all for my own good, if liberty I lost. Now they're kicking down my door, making sure I really flossed.
They call it Homeland Security,
to get away with what they do. But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you? Them, buddy, it's your act. They're cruising and they're stepping and they're dressed in black. Boy, you better not be reading no farmer's almanac.
They call it Homeland Security.
They should do time for what they do.
Real time, real hard time.
But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you?
Thank you.
flipping burgers, man, and that ain't cool.
That ain't cool.
Johnny's got no morals, only half a brain. Now he's the one deciding just who's getting on the plane.
If that's Homeland Security,
then we're all in doggy do. I'm not feeling any sort of
how about you?
It's a sham.
Homeland Security.
It's one big scam.
Homeland Security.
Yeah, real good plan.
They call it Homeland Security. Homeland
Security. See, this cat Bush is a fascist mother.
Has she got it?
Oh, yes, Homeland Security. How secure do you feel? I don't know. I feel pretty secure this afternoon. Don't feel threatened in any particular manner, I guess. Hope you're having a good afternoon as well. I'm just looking through some email here. I got an interesting article. I wish I had time to go into it today. I think we'll do it tomorrow in a section of the show where we don't talk about black box voting tomorrow. We won't have the entire show on that, but we hope to devote as much time to it as possible. And I ask all of you to get your friends and all of you who are interested in the black box voting issue, which is a huge issue, get them to call in to the program tomorrow, and let's get a good discussion going on this. We're going to have Clint Curtis from here in Florida on tomorrow. He's the gentleman that alleged that State Senator Feeney hired him to hack the voting machines. He's got a lot of facts to back up what he says. One of the most credible people that I know of in this, and we're going to grill him tomorrow. Let's just say it that way. That's what we're going to do. As you know, I'm one of these people that I'm the Thomas the Doubter, as it were. You got to show me. Got to show me. So I look forward to that tomorrow. But anyway, one of our friends from here locally, John Ostojic, sent us a email from the Center of American Progress, by the way, home of one of our guests we had on earlier today. Anu Cohen was on today talking about the gasoline, and they've got another story on there today on the Center for American Progress about some myths about high gas prices, and we will indeed talk about those tomorrow, as much time as we have tomorrow to do that. It's an interesting article. I was looking it over during the break there. This is something that's hurting us all. It really is. It's hurting every doggone one of us. And despite what the guy that, the letter I read to you to open the show about the guy that has the Cadillac Escalade and the Hummer, and he's just so damn happy to pay this extra gas price, he can't stand it. That guy's a fool. What else can you say when you know you're getting ripped off and you write and tell somebody, oh, I don't mind this one bit. You're a fool. There's just no other way to say it. And I'm sorry, but damn it, I don't suffer fools that easily. I really don't. I hear this argument from people who defend the oil companies and say that they, they've got every right to make all the money that they want to. No, I don't think they do. Not in a fair competition, they don't. They've almost gotten it to the point where they are monopolies. The oil companies are so large and have concentrated their power in the hands of a few. When you stop and think how few people really control the oil wealth and oil reserves in this world, it's about as much of a monopoly as you can get. Something everybody needs, just about everybody needs, and the control of it's in the hands of a very few people. That's a dangerous situation. We've seen it before throughout history, and we're seeing it again now. And I, for one, I'm probably the perfect liberal because I do not watch these guys on television talking about spending $32 million for a Leonardo da Vinci notebook. I do not look at that and say, man, isn't that great? No, I don't. I think it's absurd. You see these people in Hollywood walking around with $1 million worth of jewelry hanging around their neck. And am I supposed to look at them and go, boy, they've really done well for themselves. They're hardworking Americans and entrepreneurship and capitalism. No, I don't feel that way at all. I don't feel that way because I don't think the system's fair anymore. I think there was a time when it was. And I think maybe during the 50s and 60s, even through the 70s, I think it maybe was fair. I think that was maybe the best time to be an American. That might have been the zenith of America. It might have been the best time ever to be an American. Because the great middle class was in its heyday. And it is the great middle class that prospered and made this country so wealthy and gave this country the great work ethic that we were known for. It was the great middle class that helped build America, the working class people that built America. You know, this talk about trickle-down economics was nothing but fantasy. It was nothing but black magic. There never was such a thing as trickle-down economics. Never. It always trickles up. Always. And yet, there are still proponents of trickle-down economics. I don't know who came up with that idea anymore. I don't remember. I know it was during the Reagan administration when it was in its heyday. But we've learned more than ever in the last decade, I would say, particularly in the last 5 years or so, that trickle-down economics is an absolute farce. You give the hundreds of billions of dollars to the 1% at the top, and it's not going anywhere, baby. It's staying there. And I would think America has learned that lesson the hard way the last few years. You give those billionaires the corporate welfare, you give them the billions of dollars in tax cuts that they have, and they're keeping it. And they're keeping it amongst themselves, and it's not trickling down anywhere. Never has, never will. That was the perfect example of voodoo economics. Trickle-down Ronald Reagan economics. What a joke. But I guess the biggest joke of all is that they actually got people to buy it. And they did, and they elected him twice, and then Daddy Bush. And now this moron that we have in office now. That's going to go down as the most grievous error ever made in this country. Not only is he going to be the worst president in our history, and I think we know his legacy is already cut out for him for that, he's going to be known as the worst thing that ever happened to this country. The worst. Worse than anything that's ever happened to this country. Don't know how you'd live with that. I really don't. Do want you to know, I really appreciate you being with us this afternoon, listening to our guest. We're going to talk about black box voting tomorrow, and I expect you will be here. Clint Curtis is going to be here and talk about it, and we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of it, and I hope you're ready for that. You've asked for it. You're going to get it. And I want to remind you one more time, as I do every day, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Hey, gang, I'll see you tomorrow.